All right, so we're going to do Daf Lamed Daled in Psachim. We're going to start from eight lines from the top, Abaye Bar Rabin. That's where we're going to start from. The Gemara over here is talking about the sugya of Truma. And we're talking about Truma Tameh. If Truma becomes Tameh, you're not allowed to use it. The last Gemara that we just discussed was the idea that even if it becomes Tameh and nobody's allowed to eat it, you're allowed to use it to as firewood, provided that you put it into a condition that is not usable. You make it disgusting so that there's no chash that a person will accidentally eat it. And that was the last Gemara, and we brought Ravashi that said that they would just throw it, they would put it in disgusting kalim and so forth, and make it not usable to eat, and therefore there was nothing to worry about. You didn't have to worry about touching the tyrum. So continuing on that line, the Gemara continues as follows. Abaye Bar Rabin, Rav Chananya Bar Rabin, Tanu Truma Bei Rabo. Okay, so these Abaye and Rav Chananya were learning the halachas, the sugya of Truma at the yeshiva of Rabo. Pogabahu Ravo Bar Masna. So Ravo Bar Masna met them. Amalhu Mayam Risa Betrumas Tabei Mar. So he said, oh, you're learning at this fancy yeshiva. What did you learn today in the yeshiva about Truma? Amrulei. So they answered, well, we can't tell you all the chedushim that we learned. To my koshalach, what's difficult? What difficulty do you have in Hilchas Truma? And we'll try to answer you. Amrulehu. So he said to them as follows, Tanan. We learned the following. Shasile Trumois Shenitmu. If you have branches or leaves of Truma that became tummy. Again, so you can't eat them. The Shoslan. So what you did was, I can't eat them, so I replanted them. Now the halacha is, when they replant and they regenerate, what's going to be the status of this truma? Tahirim militame. So the halacha is, and the Mishnah says, they are no longer tame. Even though they were tame, once you put them in the ground, they're considered mechubar to the karka, and therefore they become regenerated, their new product, and therefore they're not tame anymore. V'asurim ilecho, but you still can't eat them. So the question is going to be, why can't you eat them? Once we say that they're not tame anymore, and they don't give off tumah, so why can't you eat them? In other words, the fact that they become tar shows you that they're regenerated, they're a new thing, and really the only reason why you can't eat truma is because it's tame. But even if you want to continue to consider it truma, so truma is edible.
But can a kohen eat it?
A kohen can't eat tamei truma. Truma that's tamei, nobody can eat.
But if it's not tamei, why can't a kohen eat it if it's...
That's the question. That's the Gemara's question. Why, once they're tar, why can't they be eaten? So Amrulei, so they said, so Abaye and Rav Chananya tried to answer him, and they said, Hachi Yama Rabba. Rabba said, Mayasurin Asurin Lazarin. And Hanami, we don't mean that it's usur for the kohen to eat. In fact, the way you understand this is that you're right. It's back to the regular status of truma, and it's usur to azar, which, by the way, it was always usur. So he says, so the Gemara says, my kamash malon. So what are you trying to teach me? Gedule truma truma. So what you're trying to teach me is that even after it regrows, that you took truma and you planted it and you thought you were going to get away with it and it was going to become regular chulin, regular food. That's not true. It remains truma. So if that's your chiddush tanina, we already learned that. Gedule truma truma. That things that grow from plants of truma remain truma. So that's not a chiddush. We already know that halacha, that they're truma, and therefore clearly Azar is not allowed to eat it. And if you want to tell me, oh, okay, so the chiddush isn't what grows continues to be truma. If you want to tell me the chiddush is that even, you know, there are different things when you plant them, there are different ways they regenerate. For example, if you take a regular seed, a kernel of wheat, and you plant that in the ground, the kernel of wheat actually becomes completely disintegrated, and it's a new kernel it's a new stalk that grows. However, let's say for argument's sake, you take an onion, and you put an onion in the ground, the bulb of the onion really is the same thing. All that happens is the leaves grow around the onion, so they continue to exist. So maybe, okay, so I understand when you take the seed and it regrows, we already learned the halacha, that continues to be truma. But maybe the chiddush is over here, that even if I take an onion and it grows in new leaves, and I take those leaves, and those leaves, maybe you want to consider them not truma. My kamash malon, b'davar she'ein zarei kolo. So you want to tell me that the chiddush b'za, even those things that the seed doesn't completely disintegrate, and even that is considered truma. Hanami tanina. We also learned that concept already. This is not a chiddush either, because it says hatevel gidulav mutarn. Now, if you take regular tevel, which is food that you already did the processing to make it chayev and taking meiser and truma, so you're not allowed to eat it. In other words, it needs Meiser and Truma to be taken, but you haven't taken that yet. So therefore, it's also Midin Tevel. So the Gedula, and then you planted it. Instead of separating the Truma and Meiser, you took those seeds and you planted. The Gedula Mutar, so Enachanami, those things that regrow from that is going to be Mutar. The Dover Shazare Kolo, that's only true about those things that when you plant them, the seed itself becomes completely disintegrated. Aval B'Dover Sha'en Zare Kolo, but if something that it does, the seed does not become disintegrated, doesn't go away, it remains intact, so then Afila Gedula and Gedula, so even those things that grow from them, so again, our example of the onion, where the onion is going to continue to exist, so then even the, if it's tevel, so even what the new onion that grows, since it's really just adding on to the existing onion, remains tevel. And if that's true about tevel, that's certainly going to be true about truma. So far, this Mishnah doesn't really, we don't understand this Mishnah because there's no chiddush over here to tell us that the regenerated stuff is going to remain truma. And if that's true, so, mamanavshach, if it's tahar, so then it's considered new material, so then it should be mutter to eat. If it's usr to eat, then it should be, then theoretically it should remain tamei. So ishtiku. So Abaya and Rav Chananya didn't have an answer. They didn't actually know how to answer the question. Amrulei, so they said to him, Midya Shemir Lechabaha, so do you know anything about this? Obviously, you're asking the question, maybe you know the halacha. Amr Lahu, so he said, yeah, I do know. He said to them, Hachi Amr Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes explained the Mishnah as follows. Maya Surin, what does it mean, Asur? Originally, we wanted to say it was Asur to Azar because we thought it was still Truma. He says, Maya Surin, no. You know what Asurin means? Asurin Lekoyanim. That even a Koyan is not allowed to eat it. Oh, but it's Truma. And according to what we just said, it should be Tahar. Even so, Hoyel V'ifsilu Lahu B'Hesach Hadas. The answer, the reason why it's possible over here is because of the concept of Hesach Hadas, which means that you forgot to think about it. You weren't watching it. And Rashi points out that by Hesach Hadas, that by Truma, there's a special pasuk, it says, Esmishmaris Trumasi, that you have to watch and you have to guard my Truma. So by the fact that it became Tamei, and not only did it become Tamei, but then you took it and you planted it, you obviously were not paying very much attention to it. You weren't being careful with it. So therefore, that din itself is enough to make it Osir for the Kayan to eat it. It is Truma, but the Kayan can't eat it. So the Gemara says, Hani, Chalamandi Yamar Hesach Hadas Psoa Gov Havi. Shapir. So I understand, if you explain, there's two reasons, there's two ways to explain what the problem is with Hesach Hadas. If the first reason is because Hesach Hadas itself is a problem, that alone is enough to make it possible. So I understand, okay, here also, it's not Tameh anymore, so fine, but you already went through the problem of Hesach Hadas, so that itself makes it a problem. El Lamandi Yamar Hesach Hadas Psoa Tumahave, but according to the way the Mandiyamars, we're going to see one moment, that the psul over here is just that because you weren't paying attention, it probably became Tameh. So Mayahave. Mayiklamemer, what are you going to say? In other words, because according to what we just said, that when you plant it, it loses the Tumah. So if it's not Tameh anymore, even if Hesach Hadas is a problem of Tumah, even real Tumah doesn't carry through after you replant it. So what's the problem over here? De'itmar. Now, where do we see this concept in Machlekes to explain Hesach Hadas? De'itmar, we learned. Hesach Hadas, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Psol Tumahave. Rabbi Yochanan says, Hesach Hadas, really, the problem is you're not guarding it probably properly. It probably became Tamei. Rav Shimon ben Lakish Amar, Psol Aguf Havei. Rav Lakish says, no, it's really a Psol. It's a Psol Aguf. It's an intrinsic problem. So before the Gemara goes back to answer this question, we still have a problem with why, in fact, the Kohen can't eat it. But now the Gemara is going to explain this Machlekes Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan Amar Psol Tumahave. He says, really, the problem is you're not paying attention, it probably became Tamei. What does that mean? Shem Yavo Eliyovi Yatarenu, that if Eliyahu Hanavi would come and tell us, oh, by the way, nothing really bad happened to it, it remained Tahar the whole time, Shem Eloi, we'll listen to him. Rav Shimon ben Lakish Amar Psol Aguf Have. He says, no, it's an intrinsic, in itself is a problem. Even if Eliyahu HaNavi tells us, oh, by the way, nothing really happened, it still remains tar, that's not going to help you because it's an intrinsic problem. It's not an issue of whether it's tummy or tar. Okay, but again, we still didn't get back to our question over here. So if so, that it becomes tar over here, why is the truma usur to eat? But as I said, the Gemara now is going to continue with explaining the Machlekes Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish before we get back to answer that question. So, Eisve Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. So Rabbi Yochanan now asks a question. Remember, Rabbi Yochanan is the one who says that the problem is that tumo. So we have another brisa. It says like this. Rabbi Shmuel ben Oshar, Rabbi Yochanan ben Breiko Oimer. Rabbi Shmuel taught us, Lul Koton Hoya ben Kevesh the Mizbeach, ben Maravi Shal Kevesh. There was a little room on the western side of the Mizbeach, meaning on the, so to speak, from the entrance of the Beis HaMikdash, if you're viewing it that way, the ramp goes up to the Mizbeach. So on the opposite side, the side that you can't see, there was a little room between the ramp and the Mizbeach itself. And it happens to be that's where they used to do the Malika for a Karban Chatos. And if the Karban Chatos became possible, so what do you do with it? You throw it underneath in that little room over there. So that's the Shasham HaYuzarkim Psule Chatos Ha'oif, that over there, that if the Chatos Ha'oif became possible, so you throw the carcass of the animal in that little hole, the Te'ubah Surasan, and you wait for the form to change. Meaning, basically, you just do lina, which is you leave it overnight, and then the next morning you take it out, the yotz on the base of sreifa, and then you burn it. Meaning that you don't burn it right away, because maybe, since it's a suffix whether or not it became tummy, it's a maybe, so we'd rather not burn it right away. So we wait till it becomes really possible. Once it becomes really possible, there's no issue to burn it. Like we learned earlier in the Masechta, that we don't like to make things tummy if we don't have to. So we don't like to burn things that may not be tummy. So that's Rabbi Yochanan's question, and the Gemara explains. So if you tell me that the problem was, the whole issue was that it maybe became tummy, I understand it's a maybe. So now it's better to wait overnight, and then it becomes really possible. So I understand. Then it makes sense to burn it. Because maybe Eliyahu and Avi will come and make it tahar, so it's better to wait till it becomes really possible, so there's no issue burning it. But according to you, Reish Lakish, that says that Hesach Hadas or Tumo is a psul haguf. So lomali ibutura. Why do I need another psul? Why do I need to wait overnight to make it possible because of lino? But now we learned in the Mishnah Zehaklal. Learned the rule is kol she psule begufa yisarf miyad. If there's an intrinsic problem, you don't have to wait for add and tack on another problem. If it's an intrinsic problem itself, you're allowed to burn it right away. However, just to finish off the Mishnah, it says bedamu b'bayilim tuber tzurasan. If the psul that happened to the carbon was something that happened to the blood, but the carbon itself was fine, but the blood, let's say, spilled out, as Rashi says, or the blood became tamei, or the bayilim became tamei, so you're not able to follow through and continue bringing the carbon. So then the problem is there's nothing wrong with the carbon; it's just that you can't finish the process. So then tuber tzurasan v'yaitz on the basis of shreva. So then it makes sense to leave it overnight, and then you bring it overnight. So again, we have a problem with Reish Lakish. According to Reish Lakish, that says that it's an intrinsic problem, so then why do we have to say over here that it became possible? That it became possible because of Hesach Hadas. Well, excuse me, why do we need the additional Yibur Tzurasa? And according to you, Reish Lakish, it's an intrinsic psul, and once it's an intrinsic psul, we should be able to burn it immediately. So the Gemara answers, you're right. However, Omer Leh Haitana. This is going according to a particular Mandi Omar. The Omar, he says, he says, even if you do have a legitimate psul, it needs Ibur Tzura. You always need Ibur Tzura. So you're right. I don't hold like, you quoted a Mishnah that says that when you have a legitimate psul, there's no need to add on, to tack on Ibur Tzura. I agree. However, this Mandi Omar argues, and I hold like this Mandi Omar that says, I always need Ibur Tzura. So over here also, even though Hesach Hadas is an intrinsic problem, I still need an additional psul. Okay. That's the first question Rabbi Yochanan asks. Now Rabbi Yochanan asks a second question. Eisvei, I'll ask you another contradiction. Nitma oy shenifsol habasar. Let's say the carbon itself became tamei, or it became posel. As Rashi goes through arichos over here to figure out that the psul over here that we're talking about is hesach hadas, but in any event, it became posel. Or another possibility is that somebody accidentally took the animal outside of the curtains of the or the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, and that itself, yoitza, is also a problem. So now, what do you do with the rest of the carbon? What do you do with the blood that didn't go out? So I took the carcass out, but I didn't take the blood out. So Rabbi Eliezer says you should still do Zrika. Now, Rashi brings down from the Gemara Menachos that this is really, actually it's a Gemara later on in Pesachim, also goes into detail with this, that the Zrika, that Rabbi Eliezer Shita is that the main part of the carbon is really the dam. So if nothing happens to the dam, I don't care what really happens to the psul of the meat of the carbon. So even though it went outside of the Beis HaMikdash and it became possible, I should still do Zrika. It's not a problem. We're going to focus on Rabbi Yeshua though. Rabbi Yeshua Omer. Rabbi Yeshua says, Lo Yizrek, you can't do Zrika because the main thing is the meat, and the meat became possible, so you can't do Zrika anymore. So let's get to the point. Umayda Rabbi Yeshua, but Rabbi Yeshua agrees, Sheim Zarek Hurtza. That if you went ahead, even though you weren't supposed to, but if you went ahead and you did the Zrika anyway, it's still going to be a good carbon. And Rashi explains, because we know that the tzitz that the Kohen Gadol wears on his forehead, that had a special power that if something became tamei and you brought the carbon anyway, the tzitz made it as if it wasn't a problem, and it's going to be an acceptable carbon for Hashem anyway. However, the thing that you need to note here is that the tzitz really only worked for tumah. But remember, this Mishnah said it was either tamei or pasul. So if the tzitz is supposed to be doing it, using its powers to make it okay, that shouldn't work over here. So we have to figure out what the psul is. My nifsul. So what did we mean by it became pasul? La behesachadas. It must be, because by process of elimination, there really is no other type of psul that we could be talking about over here, and Rashi explains why not. It must be that we're talking about hesachadas. And still we say that tzitz is going to work to make it a kosher carbon. So if you explain that the psul of hesach hadas is another way of saying tumah, so now I understand why the tzitz is able to help. Because the tzitz always works to make sure that even though something is tumah, it's still a good carbon. But according to you, Reish Lakish, that says that hesach hadas is an intrinsic problem. It has nothing to do with tumah. It's just itself is a problem. So why does it work? Why does this carbon become a kosher carbon? It has another problem that the tzitz is not going to alleviate. So why is it a kosher carbon? So the Gemara says, you're right. And a Hanami over here. My nifsel b'tful yoim. You assumed that the reason why it became possible was because of hesach hadas. And therefore you had this question on me. But again, like any other assumption, it could be wrong. The reason why it was possible over here was because it was a tful yoim. And actually, interestingly to note, based on what we learned in the first parak over here also, that remember there's a difference between the word tameh and the word possible. When something is tameh, that means it's so tameh it's able to make something else tameh. The word pasul always means that it itself is tame, but it doesn't have enough tumma in it to make something else tame. It doesn't have enough power to make something else tame. That's what the definition of the word pasul is. And if you also recall, when we learned these halachas, one of the examples that the Gemara gave of pasul was a tful yoim. A tful yoim was somebody who was originally tame. He already went to the mikvah, but he's just waiting for nightfall in order to become completely tahar. So during that stage, he's like quasi tame. He's not a completely tame, but he's not completely tahar either. So when he touches something, he makes it tame, but not tame enough to make it really tameh, so we call that pasul. In any event, so it's another form of tumah. And therefore, once we're dealing with tumah, so now it makes sense that the tzitz is going to be to make it a kasher carbon. However, the problem is, ihachi hainu tumah, tameh. So what's the difference? If it's a full-fledged tumah or it's a partial tumah, in any event, the Mishnah is saying the same example twice. My answer is, you're right, trei gavni tumah. There's two types of tameh, and the Mishnah had to say, the Gemara doesn't go into why, but the Mishnah had to say both examples because I wouldn't realize that the tzitz is necessarily going to work for both of them. So I had to list both a full-fledged tumah and a partial tumah. In any event, it has nothing to do with hesach hadas. And that's why it's not going to be a problem for me, Reish Lakish says, that the carbon is a kosher carbon, because I'm not dealing with hesach hadas here at all. I'm just dealing with the din of tumah, and tumah that sits will take care of. In any event, so right now, what we're up to in the Gemara is, the Gemara answered the main question, which was, why is it that the kohen is not allowed to eat this truma? The answer is, because of hesach hadas. So we had a question that answer really only works according to Rabbi Yochanan that says hesach hadas is a tumah problem. But according to Reish Lakish, that hesach hadas is a main intrinsic problem. The Gemara really doesn't have a good teretz. The Gemara never got back to explain how we're going to explain that Mishnah according to Reish Lakish. However, now the Gemara continues and says a completely different teretz. Basically, don't worry about anything we discussed till now. I'm going to discuss a new way to answer that main question. The Gemara says as follows: Kisalik Rabin, when Rabin went up to Eretz Yisrael, Amr l'shmeitzah kameidah Rabbi Yirmiyah. So he repeated the sugya. He started learning the sugya with Rabbi Yirmiyah, who also, by the way, happened to be somebody who originally started in Bavel and then moved to Eretz Yisrael. That's just an aside. The Amr, and when Rabbi Yirmiyah heard the way he was learning, he said, "Bavloi tipshoi, you foolish Babylonians, foolish people from Bavel, mishum di yasi va'arad chashucha, because you say things that are, because you live in a land that's dark, because Rashi explains they live in a valley, so it's not as light." So you say things that are dark, meaning you say things that are not clear and you don't really understand what you're saying. Didn't you learn Reb Shimon ben Lakish's halacha, Mishmei de Rav Oishia, that says in the name of Rav Oishia? So he's going to say a completely different halacha, and based on this halacha, we're going to understand Pshat in our Mishnah. And the halacha is as follows. Mehachag shenitmu. If let's say before they on Sukkot there's a nisach hamayim, they used to pour water on the mizbeach, but they used to prepare this water because they didn't want to have to do the extra tircha on yontif itself. They always used to prepare the water erev yontif, and they used to cover it and they used to have it prepared in the well ready for to take out of the well for on Sukkot for nisach hamayim. But what happens if those waters became tameh? So what do you do? Because now you still have to do nisach hamayim. So the Gemara says it depends. Well, it's actually Rav Oshia talking. Hashikon v'achar kach hiktishon. If first what you did is this concept of hashaka. Hashaka is the concept where you have two bodies of water that are touching through either a drop or a little bit more, depending on the situation. But hashaka is the concept that the two bodies of water are touching. And one body of water is a completely kosher body, like a mikvah. And one body of water, as we're discussing in our case, is in a pail or something like that, that became tummy. So if you did the hashaka first, what hashaka accomplishes is that the two bodies of water are now connected. And if one body of water wasn't tummy, it now makes the tummy water also one and the same, and the tumma goes away. It's like going to the mikvah. It's like putting a keli into the mikvah. That's how you put water into the mikvah, even though water is water. But by basically, hashaka comes from the word kissing. If the two waters are kissing, are touching each other, so then the tumme body of water becomes tar also. However, the Brice over there, Rav Oshia, says as follows, hashikon v'achar kach hiktishon tahirin. If you first did the hashaka, before you made the water hektish, meaning before you do nisach hamayim, what you actually do is you take that water and you put it into a kli shareis, you put it into a keli that's already designated as hektish, and that makes the water hektish before you do the nisach hamayim. So if you do the hashaka first and then you put it into the keli, it's tahar because it was regular water and it became completely tahar. There's no reason why you can't use it for nisach hamayim. However, hektishon, if first you put it into the kli shareis and then it became tummy, or it was tummy before, but you first put it into the klisharis, v'achakach hashikon, and then you try to use this process of doing hashaka, of adding it to a regular mikvah, tamein, it remains tummy. Now, really, as Rashi explains, that this is really only a din d'rabbanan, because midaraisa, it's completely tar because it touched the tahar water. However, midaraisa, we say we don't want to use this, we're going to consider this tame anyway. Now here is an example of something that really went through the process to make it tahar, but we add a special chumrah to say that it's going to remain tame anyway. Because it's hektish, we're going to maintain it a level as tame. So remember, our case was a case where you took a plant, a vegetable, a seed, or something like that, and you replanted it. Now, putting the water back into the mikvah is the same thing as putting a seed back into the ground. Both of them are considered mechubur to its source. Putting water back into a mikvah is attached to its source. Putting a seed back into the ground is attached to its natural source. And even so, when you put the water back into its natural source, the tumah stayed through, even though it was, if you want to use the word, it was as if it was regenerated, as if it started over again. But midarabanan, we're machmer by hektish. So the same thing is going to be true over here. Michti, zriya ninhu. So putting the water back is no different than planting it. Mali hashikon v'achar kach hektishon. So why should there really be a difference between doing the hashaka first and then making it hektish versus mali hektishon v'achar kach hashikon? Versus if I had made it hektish first and then did the hashaka, why should it make a difference? Almo, so we see by the fact that we do make that distinction, Almo, we see, enzriya lehektish. So we see that the concept of putting it back into its natural source doesn't work for hektish. It's a special chumrah that we're going to make sure that we're going to say, well, since it was once upon a time tameh, we're going to continue the tumah throughout as well. So hachanami enzriya lechumah. So that answers our original question also. Even though I took this plant, this was originally truma tameh, and I couldn't eat it. And I tried to plant it, and I said, well, look at this. It's not tameh anymore. I say, you're right. Midaraisa, it's not tame anymore because I put the seed back into the ground. It was attached to the ground. There's really no issue anymore. However, because truma is like hektish, and the Gemara in Yevamos really goes through the whole sugya of why truma is similar to hektish. But in any event, they are very similar in that respect, in the way we treat them. So they're just like hektish. Doesn't lose its, we can, it really is tame. It really is tahar. Really minadin, minatayra, it's really tahar. But we give it the chumras of tumma. So too by truma also, even though it went through a process that really technically made it tahar, we give it the chumras of tumma anyway. So it's like any, so therefore a kayin, even though it's truma, a kayin would normally be allowed to eat it, but we give it the chumras of tumma and now it becomes tame, you're not allowed to eat it. Okay. So that answers the question. Yosef Rabdimi v'kamer lo lahosh maitzah. So Rav Dimi now repeated this sugya the way we just explained it. Omlei Abaya. So Abaya said, Hektishon b'kli kamar abo b'pel loy. So now, you notice over here by the Me'achag, we said something very specific. We said the difference is that you took the water and you put it into a kli shareis, and you put it into a already designated kli that had the kedusha of hektish, and then we said, you know what, once it's in that kli already, it's not going to lose the tumah. However, I want to know, was that really specific? The reason, now water, obviously you can't hold water without a keli. It has to be in some sort of vehicle, some sort of instrument that's going to hold it. So is that, was that specific by a kli that that's why we're so machmer? Or is that true even if it wasn't in a kli and we just happened to be discussing a kli because that's just practically speaking the way it had to be? So that's a bias question. Hekdishim b'kli kamar, was it because the hekdish went through a kli? Avo b'peh lo yovid rabban and milo. But enachanami, if the only reason it became hekdish, and there are ways to make certain things like korbanis, for example, you can make them hekdish simply by saying, I want this to be hekdish. But that's already not the same, and therefore the milo of tumma won't apply. Oidumo b'peh nami yovid rabban and milo. Or maybe even when I just decided in my, by saying so that it should be hekdish, maybe this concept of tumma will last throughout as well. So that was a biased question. So Amar Alei, so Rav Dimi answered him, Zuloi Shamati, you know, the truth of the matter is I don't know the answer to this question. I never heard, in this context, I never heard the halacha. Ki Yaitzavoi Shamati, but I heard something very similar to this that I think would apply over here also, according to Rav Dimi, as we'll see. To Amar Rav Avua, because Rav Avua told us, Amar Rav Yechanan, send in the name of Rav Yechanan, Novim Shenitmu. Let's say you had grapes. Now this goes back to the sugya that we did on Daf Lama Gimel. But it ties in over here also. Anavim shenitmu, let's say you had a grape that became tamei. So dorchon, if you squeeze them out, the achar kach hektishon, and then afterwards, you know, you could use the wine for nisach hayayin, for the karbonis and so forth. So first, now the problem was that this grape was tamei. And the question is, what happens to the wine that comes out of the grape? Is the wine also tamei? So if I first squeeze it out, the achar kach hektishon, and then I make the wine hektish, tahirin, it's going to be tar. Hektishon v'achakach dorchon. If I first made the wine hektish, and then I first made the grape hektish v'achakach dorchon, and then I try to squeeze out the wine, tameim is going to be tamei also, and we'll see that this is talking about even though normally this wine should not be tamei, but see we're going to give it the chumra of tumah. But the problem, here's the point that the Gemara is trying to prove from this, v'ha novim, the Gedusha's penin. Remember, his question was, did this specifically apply only because I put it into a kli sharis, or did it apply even to hektish that I just, on my own, decided that I wanted it to be hektish? This case of grapes is a case where I can just decide on my own. I don't have to put it into a kli sharis in order to be able to use it for nisach hayayin. It's just something that I decide to do on my own. It doesn't go into a kli sharis, and even so, we see that once you made it hektish and it became tameh, it remains with the level of tumah. So we see that even though it's something that I decided to make hektish on my own with my by my own saying so, and even so the Rabbanan gave it to the halachas of tumah, and we don't allow it to become tar, even though, again, squeezing the juice is like regeneration. So Rav Yosef anavim kamris. So one second, Rav Yosef says, so Rav Dimi wanted to bring a raya from here that you see that it even applies when I made it hektish bepeh. So you say, one second, you're bringing a raya from grapes, as we explained, by grapes, that's because that's the only way to do it. Hacha ba'anovim shel truma askinon. Over here, you're bringing a raya from grapes that were hektish. Here, we're talking about grapes that are truma askinon. The kedushas pen did who? Ki kedushas kli damyu. See, by truma, there is no such thing as a kli sharis. Hektish has two options. It has, sometimes you could use a kli sharis, sometimes you could say it that it's hektish. But by truma, to make something truma, there is no such concept as putting it into a kli sharis. So you can't really compare to what the halacha would be if I only did it bepeh. Because there is only one way. There is no distinction between doing it bepeh. Doing it, making it truma bepeh, the kedushas peh did hu, kedushas kli damya. Making it truma because you said so is really the equivalent of making it hektish by putting it into a kli. And just by putting it into a kli, everybody agrees that once it becomes tamei, there's nothing you can do about it. So too by truma, once it becomes tamei, there's really nothing you can do about it. Regeneration is not going to help you. Avalhani, the boy kli, but when you're dealing with hektish, because there is a distinction and clearly putting it into a kli is a higher level of hektish, those that do have a kli option, bepeh lo yavad rabbanan mailo. So when you say it's hektish because you said so, it's not going to have the same level of hektish, and therefore it could lose its shame tumah. All right, so that's the way. So Rav Yosef disagrees with Rav Dimi and says that it does not apply. It applies by truma, but it doesn't apply by hektish. If I just said so that it should be hektish, or I just said that it should be truma. Now we're going to be. Now the Gemara is going to go back and be very specific with the words that Rav Dimi said. Rav Dimi said dorchon, that if you squeeze the grapes, and you didn't make them hektish yet, the juice that comes out of the grapes is not going to be tamei. However, the problem is, based on the Gemara that we learned on Daf Lama Gimel, dorchon just means you squeeze, and we have no limitations. Va'afilu tuva. That means even if I squeeze a lot of grapes at once, Did Rabbi Yochanan really say that there's no limitation on it at all? Rabbi Yochanan himself said on Daf Lama Gimel, when you have grapes that are tame, the only way to go through the process to allow the juice that comes out of the grapes not to become tame is if I limit the amount of grapes to less than a kabeah. Because as Rashi explained on Daf Lama Gimel, that when you have less than the shear of a kabeah, either the thing that's metame is not metame when itself is less than the shear, or the thing that is becoming tame is, if it's less than the shear, is not tame. And the problem here is, if I have a lot of grapes, eventually I'm going to get too many, I'm going to have over the shear, and the juice that comes out is going to be tame also. So why over here are we saying, even if the grapes are tame, why are you allowing the person to squeeze out the grapes and consider the juice, the grape juice or the wine, to be tahar, if you're dealing with more than the shear? So Gemara gives a very interesting teretz. One answer is anachanami. That's what I meant. Even though I didn't say it, you're right, the sugyas of how much you're allowed to do, I wasn't discussing that, I just said squeeze, but you know, the other sugyas of how much, I meant it over here also that you're going to do less than a kabeya. Fine. That's one answer. Iba yisema, no. There's a real distinction between your case before and my case over here. Iba yisema, another answer you could say is hosom dinogulu berishon. It's very simple. Over there, the case was, what type of tuma was the grape itself? Remember, because the grapes are going to make the juice tummy. But how tummy was the grape? There are different levels of tuma. There's Ava tuma, there's a Rishon, there's a Sheni. If we're dealing with Hekdesh and Truma, it could even be a Shlishi. So what was the grape? Denogu Barishon. Over there, the case was that the grape was a Rishon. The Havalu Inhu Sheni. So now it comes out that the juice that comes out would be a sheni, and actually we learned, Rashi points out, that when juices become a sheni, they even have the halacha status of a rishon. In any event, so it's a real problem that the juice is going to become tameh, so we have to be very careful that you're using less than the shear so that the tumah doesn't carry on to the next level. That's why over there we say it's dafka less than a kabeah. Hocha denogo b'sheni, over here in our case where I didn't give a limitation in the amount, it's talking about that the grapes themselves were only a sheni. Well, excuse me, the way Rashi explains is, Hacha, the Nog of a Sheni means the grapes themselves only touched a Sheni, which means the grapes themselves are a Shlishi. Now, Shlishi, you can only have a Shlishi if, even by Chulin, if you do them al Tairis HaKodesh, in other words, that you want to use them on the level of Hekdesh, so the grapes can become the Havalu Shlishi. So the grapes themselves become a Shlishi. So then, for the Shlishi to make the juice after that, a Revi is not, by Truma, is not going to accomplish anything. It's not going to be a Revi. So since it's not going to be a Revi, there's nothing to be concerned about, there's nothing to worry about, so I don't care about the share, there's no limitation. So again, so both things are true. When do I say that I have a limitation in the amount? It's only talking about when it's possible, potentially, for the juice to become tummy. So then I have to be careful that I use less than the shear so it can't become tummy. But if the grapes that we're dealing with over here are already, so to speak, on the lowest prong, the lowest level of tumah, where they can't give off tumah anyway, so then it doesn't matter what the shear is because they're not going to make anything else tummy afterwards, so I don't care how many grapes I'm doing at a time. So Amar Rava. So Rava says Zafana Nami Tanina. We also learned this concept that there's a difference between that Rashi, the way Rashi learns is that there's a difference of whether I make the hektish bepeh whether I made it hektish bekli or even bepeh. So here it's actually Rashi's pshat is a little bit difficult. We'll learn Tosus's pshat. So Amar Rava Afana Nami Tanina. We learned this concept that it applies by peh also. We learned in a brayso. V'nosan alav mayim chayim el keli. This is talking about when you're making the Paraduma. So the process is that first you have to put water from a mikvah, from a mayan, from a well, into the kli, and then you add the ashes to the kli. So the question is, how do you get the water into the kli? Do you take the kli that you're going to use and you dip the cup itself into the well? Or do you take do the regular process? You draw the water from the well and then pour it into the kli that you're going to use. So here it says, v'nosan mayim chayim al keheli, that the kli has to have the mayim chayim. Shetehei chiyusim b'kli. All we really care about is that the Mayim Chaim is in the kli before you put the ashes on. However, the next pasuk, the part of the beginning of the pasuk was v'nosan, that you put the water in, that you give it in. So almo talushin inhu. So it sounds like the water was first separated out via another kli, that you drew the water with a regular bucket, and then you poured it into the kli you're going to use. But the problem is, then it says that it has to be Mayim Chaim El Keli, that it has to have the... So there's a contradiction in the pasuk itself. Are we talking about that the kli itself was dipped into the water? Or are we talking about you drew the water somewhere else and then poured it into this cup itself? So there's a contradiction. So what do we see? So what does the Gemara answer? Really, the way Rashi learns is Ela Maila. It's Maila, it's a special Maila that we do, that really the halacha is, it was specific, it was accurate the way we said it, that it doesn't, it can really be poured into this Kli and it doesn't matter. But there's a special Chumra that we do, that you're going to pour it into the, that you should dip the Kli that you're going to use directly into the Mayan. Just a special Chumra. That's the way Rashi learns. And if so, Hachanami Maila. So too over here also, we're just going to have extra Chumras that we're going to say that just, even though it's really not Tamei, we're going to give extra Chumras that it's going to become Tamei. So that's how Rashi learns Pshat in the Gemara. Really, it's very difficult to understand Rashi because there really is no connection. Rashi's just saying it's a Chumra over there, and it's, so once we see that we do extra Chumras by Hekdesh, so it makes sense that we do an extra Chumra by Hekdesh also by Hilchus Tumah. But the way you do the Parah Aduma and the way you do Hilchus Tumah really have nothing to do with each other other than the fact that we see we gave extra Chumras. That's the way Rashi learns. Tosfos learns that this pasuk is actually darshaning the whole concept that we've been discussing the whole last blot, that this whole last blot about whether or not when you put something into its original source, whether that's considered mechubal karka and it's considered regenerated, the new product that comes out is considered a new item and it's not tamei anymore. So Tosfos is learning the Gemara to say that you specifically, the Rabbanon require that you dip the keli into the water itself, into the source of water itself, and even so, that it's not good enough that you dip the water, the kli into the even though you dip the kli into the water itself, it can't be tamei. So if it had been tamei even before you dipped the kli into the water, it would not be usable for the para aduma. So what do we see? We see that even though you dipped it into its source, if it was tamei from before, the tumah continues throughout. It doesn't, so to speak, it doesn't stop. It doesn't stop because you put it into its natural source. The tumah, if it was tamei before, it continues to be tamei after, which is what the Gemara was discussing this whole time. So just like we see by Parah Aduma, it had to be specifically that it was tahor before. And if you had a problem with tumah beforehand, dipping it into the well was not going to solve that problem. So too by Truma and Hekdesh, the cases that we were discussing throughout the Gemara, that even if you dip it back into its source, so you take the seed and you throw it back into the ground, it's not going to get rid of the Hilchos Tumah. All right, we'll stop over here.